Well, I've wanted to preach this sermon tonight. Early on in the year, since I learned of our focus for 2022. Because when you have a theme that is evangelistic in its nature, I fear that it can become discouraging or overwhelming to the members when we think that evangelism is a one-size-fits-all. And the first time I ever remember thinking what I want to preach about tonight was several years ago. There were a group of young preachers. It was so long ago, I was one of the young preachers that was there. And during the weekend that we were together, one of the topics we discussed was evangelism. And there was a preacher there that was talking about a brother who is well known for how he goes into the community and sets up shop in various places in town and talks to people and has studies and converts people. And he was, in a sense, shaming every preacher in the room because we weren't doing that. And one of the older preachers spoke up and said, "Well, brother, we're not all like him. He's using the abilities God gave him, but that doesn't mean God's given every single one of us in this room those same abilities. And we don't approach any other part of our work that way. We don't say that every single member who is a male here needs to lead singing like Tyler Baker does. And every single male member needs to lead as beautiful a prayer as Lou Corey just did. We understand that we use what God has given us to His glory. And part of being in the local church, the body, is every single member having a different function. It's just as what Paul described in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, when he spoke of the church at Corinth as a body, and the different parts of the body that God had assigned a function. And I want you to notice what he said in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 at verse 27. "Now you are Christ's body and individually members of it. And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, administrations, various kinds of tongues. All are not apostles, are they? All are not prophets, are they? All are not teachers, are they? All are not workers of miracles, are they? All do not have gifts of healings, do they? All do not speak with tongues, do they? All do not interpret, do they?" Wouldn't we say it this way? All are not Bible class teachers, are they? All are not deacons, are they? But does that make one more important than the other? Does that mean we need one and not the other? No, they have different functions. And we have to learn to see evangelism the same way. We're not all doing the same things. Nor should we guilt or shame people that they're not doing it like somebody else is. I hesitate to tell you my title for tonight, but I decided I'm going to do it so long as I can give my disclaimers up front. Because I've chosen to call the sermon tonight Congregational Evangelism. But I want to say a couple of things. Number one, we understand that evangelism is an individual responsibility. Each one of us as an individual is involved in the work of evangelism. We're not going to say that because I'm a member of this church, the church is doing it as a whole and I have no part. When I say congregational evangelism, I mean that each part of the body is doing their function using what God has given them. And when all of those come together, we're going to make disciples. And it's not about what I do or what you do. It's what we do. And God gives the increase. It's the same principle as the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. Remember, the master gave talents or money to his servants. And how did Jesus say he did this in Matthew 25 and verse 15? Each according to his own ability. When we engage in congregational evangelism, it's each one doing according to his own ability. And we all play a part in making disciples of Jesus Christ. I want to use for our text tonight Romans chapter 12. That's another passage that talks about the church as a body, using that metaphor, Romans chapter 12. And let's begin reading at verse 3. Romans 12 and verse 3. For through the grace given to me, I say to every man among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each a measure of faith. For just as we have many members in one body, and all the members do not have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. And since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let each exercise them accordingly. If prophecy, according to the proportion of his faith. If service, in his serving. He who teaches, in his teaching. Or he who exhorts, in his exhortation. He who gives, with liberality. He who leads, with diligence. He who shows mercy, with cheerfulness. Apparently there was a problem in the first century churches with people thinking that their gift, and sometimes in the first century it was a spiritual, miraculous gift, thinking that their gift was more important. It's what we saw in 1 Corinthians 12. That's why Paul starts this section by saying, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. To our people, I think we struggle on the other end. We think less of ourselves than we ought to think. I'm not the one out there on the front lines. I'm not the one in front, before the congregation publicly. And so my part is not that important. I want you to see that each function of the body serves its purpose for the glorification of the head and for the purpose of making the gospel available to all. And Paul speaks of seven functions that I want us to consider tonight in this context of congregational evangelism. Let's look at the first one. He says prophecy. Now, when we think of prophecy, we usually think of telling the future. And so we think of Jeremiah and Ezekiel, Daniel, Elijah, Elisha, because part of their work was God giving them a message of this is coming in the future. And so they predicted, and certainly that was part of prophecy. But they're not the only ones who were called prophets in the Old Testament. People like Moses and David were prophets because they spoke an inspired message. God gave them words to say, and they spoke on his behalf. It wasn't just foretelling, it was forthtelling. And so I want you to see that part of the work of evangelism is going to be the public proclamation of the Word of God. Yes, it involves private studies. Yes, it may be at a kitchen table or in a living room somewhere or at a table at Starbucks. But evangelism is also and will always be still public preaching. How in the world would you have 3,000 baptized on the day of Pentecost in Acts 2 if there was no gospel preaching? And so we will continue to preach book, chapter, and verse. We will continue to make known the gospel publicly in our classes and from this pulpit. And may I add, we will continue to offer the Lord's invitation at the end of our services. Why? Because somebody's heart may have been pricked. Somebody might decide that's the occasion where I'm going to obey the gospel. And so the public proclamation of the gospel is part of our work of evangelism. When men speak, they're going to speak as the oracles of God. We're going to preach what the apostles preached in the first century. Jesus and His resurrection. Christ and Him crucified. What must I do to be saved? Part of congregational evangelism is this work of prophecy, making known the inspired words from God. Look what he says. Secondly, if service, in his serving, verse 7. This is the word ministry. Sometimes this word service is translated deacon. Sometimes it's translated minister. But the Greek word means to wait upon. To wait upon. So think about that. In God's eyes, already here in the first two, we've got serving on the same level as preaching. God sees them both as essential in the body. Somebody who preaches publicly and somebody who serves, who waits on one another. And who is it that we're going to wait on when we come together? It's going to be our visitors. We don't have to go door knocking to find them. They've come through our doors. We don't have to go. They've found us. And so we're going to serve them. We're going to wait on them. And we're going to make certain they know of anything else before they leave, that we're a people who love one another and love them. I really messed up one year. I scheduled a meeting right in the middle, right during the week of the World Series. And I was so disappointed. But I said, I'm going to go preach. And got there. And services in the evening started at 7, which helped a little. But would you believe, that building was completely empty by 8:10. I mean, I stopped walking to the back after services for fear of getting run over, of people exiting the building. And as a first-time visitor, that left an impression that these people don't enjoy being together. I mean, they can't wait to get out of here. We've got to think about the impression we're giving on those who are our visitors to our assembly. We're trying to teach them. We're trying to serve them. And I want you to see that just your friendly welcome, just your showing them Jesus by the way you are interested in them is going to make a difference. And there are people who do that better than others. And if that's your gift, then use that. That's the way you're making known the gospel. The gospel of him who didn't come to be served, but to serve. And so in your service, in your waiting, glorify God with that. It's part of congregational evangelism. Be one who waits on those who have come to see. He continues in verse 7. He who teaches in his teaching. This is just a word that simply means to provide instruction. And we've already talked about the public preaching or teaching. And so this, I want you to think about how we teach one another. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and in verse 2, a model that was used for our preacher training program here, the Paul-Timothy model. And the thing, 2 Timothy 2:2, which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So you see the idea of the things that you've learned, you teach that to another, and then they'll teach another. And this will continue to be passed down to God's people in every generation. That may mean that if you're studying the Bible with somebody, that you say to another, come go with me. Or that may mean if you know somebody else has a Bible study, that you ask, can I go with you? He who teaches in his teaching. You ever wonder why Jesus sent them out two by two? I suspect part of that is they could learn from one another. This is a bedrock of the Bowman School of Preaching, learning by observation. We got to go everywhere he went. We got to do everything he did. He who teaches in his teaching. Congregational evangelism. We're all involved, each part doing his part. The next verse, he says in verse 8, he who exhorts in his exhortation. Now, here's a word that we looked at already with our study of Barnabas. It's the Greek word to call alongside. It's also translated consolation or encouragement. I want to look again at Acts the 11th chapter. Keep your place here in Romans 12, but look at Acts chapter 11 and verse 23. And notice the work of Barnabas when he was called to the city of Antioch. Acts 11 and verse 23. Then when he had come and witnessed the grace of God, he rejoiced and began to encourage them all with resolute heart to remain true to the Lord. That was his exhortation, to remain true to the Lord. You know, there are times that we are tempted to think that when somebody is baptized into Christ, we don't have to pay any more attention to them. I mean, we got them to the water, and they're now a Christian, and so we'll move on to somebody else. You know what they need? They need encouragement to remain true to the Lord. They need people who will be exhorters, people of consolation, people like Barnabas. And there are people here who excel at that. I mean, folks, there are people here who will write you a thank you card for writing them a thank you card. You ever notice that? They're just good at it. May the Lord increase their tribe. Remember, we're not just called to baptize. Jesus said, go and make disciples. Remain true to the Lord. Who's going to be our encouragers and our exhorters? We'll need that for congregational evangelism. Verse 8 continues, he who gives with liberality. That's a word that just means to share or to impart by contributing to a need. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, we find the example of the churches of Macedonia. 2 Corinthians 8. Notice what Paul says about them beginning at verse 1. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 1. Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much entreaty for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Because this was a people who first gave themselves to the Lord, they understood that everything the Lord's given us, we're going to share that. And we're going to do that with liberality. If anybody has a need, we're going to help provide for that need. We're going to be people who invest in the souls of men. Somebody once asked Aristotle why he didn't write a lot of his instructions down. He had all these wise things that he said. Why aren't you writing them down? And Aristotle said, because if you write them into the hearts of men, they'll live forever. Folks, the things we have in this life stay here. We don't take them with us. They don't accompany us on our journey. But when we take those things and put them into people, those are what will last. Those will accompany us because they'll be souls that are saved. He who gives with liberality. God says that's just as important as the one who dispenses the message of salvation. And we need givers. We need those who will invest in the people business. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. He who leads, Paul continues in Romans 12, he who leads with diligence, that is, who guides, who directs, who manages and rules over. This speaks to our leaders. Yes, the leaders are involved in this great work. They're not those who say, here's what we're going to do, now go and do it. But we have leaders here who say, here's what we're going to do, now follow me. In 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter, he said, as a fellow elder, gave instructions to those who serve as elders. He said to lead by example, not lording over the flock, but letting them see in you that you're following after the chief shepherd, that is, Jesus Christ. And so this work of evangelism extends from the top down. Why is it that an elder is to be apt to teach? Because he's leading. And so we're going to follow the leader. He who leads with diligence. Aren't you thankful that we have patient leaders? Not those who want to be CEOs of a company or cowboys of the herd, but shepherds of the flock who go before us and lead with all diligence. They have set before us the goal. The gospel is for all. Let's follow them by doing our part. And then finally, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. These are acts of compassion or mercy. The work of evangelism is going to involve failure. It's a work that can at times be discouraging. And people are going to disappoint us. You know what we need? We're going to need those who are good at being compassionate and merciful. Those who will remember, well, that's what God did for me when I was stubborn, when I was obstinate and refused to obey. And so I'm going to show that same mercy to another. In the epistle of Jude, verses 22 and 23, I want you to notice what was written about mercy and compassion. Jude, verse 22. Have mercy on some who are doubting. Save others, snatching them out of the fire, and on some have mercy with fear, hating even the garment polluted by the flesh. And the setbacks that come and the things that we try that fall on their face, we're not going to be defeated. We're not going to respond in anger, frustration. We're going to have the same mercy and compassion that Jesus had when he looked out over the crowd and saw them like sheep without a shepherd. And he was moved with compassion. We have people that excel at that. May the Lord increase their tribe. One final passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. You always hear the most pages turning on the final passage. 1 Corinthians chapter 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Beginning at verse 6. I planted, Paul said. Apollos watered. But God was causing the growth. Now he who plants and he who waters are one. But each will receive his own reward according to his labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. Paul said in bringing these people to the Lord, I planted the seed and didn't seem to have any fruition. But he just kept scattering. And along came Apollos, and he watered that seed in. And when it caused growth, neither Paul nor Apollos took the credit. It was God. It was God's work, and his name to be glorified. I remember several years ago, then Leah Hyde brought her boyfriend to the services. And I didn't like him. This baseball player, what's he doing with Leah Hyde? And he came in and he was pretty wide-eyed. He had not seen anything like this before. And he asked questions, and he studied with Leah, and he studied with Mark and Gail, and he still came and observed. He didn't understand everything, but he just kept coming. I would speak to him some in the foyer, and he would ask questions, and he'd go on his way. And one night, we had a young boy come forward to obey the gospel, and Tim was here, and he witnessed that, and he said it was like everything fell into place in his mind, and he finally understood, and it all came together, and he asked if he could meet with me the next night. And we did. And about 1:30 in the morning, we came back to the building. You know what I call that? Congregational evangelism. We all played a part. We just did what God gave us to do to the best of our ability. And God caused the increase. That's what we want to do. That's the focus we want to have. We don't want to lose one, because that one is now preaching the gospel in Mont Bellevue. And who knows how many will come to the Lord because you did your part. It may be tonight that you're the one whose heart has been pricked. You're the one that the message has found its mark in. And you realize that you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's open to all. Would you come and confess your faith and, repenting of your sins, be baptized tonight? Would you make this as the first step, not only in serving the Lord and being his disciple, but then going into the fields and making more. We want to invite you to come and make that decision. Or if we can help you in any way in the gospel, this song of encouragement is for you right now to come as we stand and as we sing.